Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Dogs and Drugs Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 31, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Florida v. Jardine and Florida v. Harris. Both cases involve police dogs that are trained to detect illegal narcotics. Florida v. Jardine considers whether taking such a dog to smell the exterior of a house where police suspect marijuana is being grown constitutes a search under the Fourth Amendment, requiring probable cause. The question in Florida v. Harris is whether a narcotics detection dog's alert constitutes probable cause for the search of a private vehicle. To discuss the case, we have Alina Traeger, who is an assistant professor at George Mason University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Traeger.
Dogs are every man's proverbial best friends, but they've been particularly good friends to the American police for the last several decades. The two cases the Supreme Court just heard seek to further define the Fourth Amendment implications of this close police-canine relationship. In the first case I'll talk about, Florida v. Jardines, the issue is whether a drug detection dog sniffing a front door of a private residence is a search under the Fourth Amendment. The operative facts here are pretty simple. You have two police detectives accompanying a drug detection dog named Frankie along a driveway leading up to Jardines' residence, onto the porch, and to the front door of the home. Frankie sniffed around the front door and alerted to the scent of contraband. Now, the detectives there had no probable cause and no warrant to conduct this action, and if using a dog to sniff for drugs at the front door is not a search, then their actions were lawful, and in fact, police can use dogs in this manner anytime. If, however, what they did was a search, then it is subject to the requirement of the Fourth Amendment that the search be reasonable, which normally means it has to be carried out pursuant to a warrant backed by probable cause. Now, the main arguments made by both sides here try to paint this case as a simple extension of opposing precedent. The state of Florida, the petitioner points to prior cases in which a sniff by a drug-detecting dog was found to not be a search. In one of the cases, Florida relies on United States v. Place, the Supreme Court held that allowing a trained drug detection dog to sniff the defendant's luggage in a public place is not a search. In a later case, Illinois v. Cabalas, the Supreme Court held that a dog sniff of a car during a lawful routine traffic stop was also not a search. Now, why wasn't a dog sniff a search in those situations? In general, a search occurs when a government action intrudes upon an individual's legitimate or reasonable expectation of privacy. People certainly have legitimate expectations that the contents of their luggage and the contents of their cars remain private. But a dog sniff does not actually reveal the private contents of luggage or cars. The only content it can reveal is contraband. And crucially, the Supreme Court stated in Cabalas, government conduct that only reveals the possession of contraband compromises no legitimate privacy interest. Florida argued this case is no different. It doesn't matter that this dog was sniffing a house and not luggage or a car. The detectives and the dog were in a place they had a right to be in, and Frankie detected from the outside the presence of something in which people do not have a legitimate privacy interest. Now, Jardines argues that the difference between a piece of luggage or a car in the one hand and a house are actually crucial here. Now, the Supreme Court has repeatedly recognized the heightened expectations of privacy in the home. In particular, Jardines and the Florida Supreme Court analogize this set of facts to a different case, to Kylo v. United States. And Kylo, the Supreme Court held that the use of a thermal imager to detect levels of heat in a residence was a search. That was a search because it enabled officers to obtain, by sense-enhancing technology, information about the interior of the home that could not otherwise have been obtained without physical intrusion into a constitutionally protected area. Now, even though the information the police learned in that case, that, you know, one part of the house is emitting more heat than another part, isn't very intimate or private, Justice Scalia, writing for the court, made clear that in the home, all details are intimate details. In other words, people have a legitimate expectation of privacy in all details inside their homes, which Jardines argues must include the presence of contraband. So we have something of a battle of precedents here, and if the court were simply to pick a winner in this fight, it would have to either distinguish Kylo to extend Place and Cabalas, or distinguish Place and Cabalas to extend Kylo, and both options are certainly possible. As Jardines argues, we can limit Place and Cabalas to their facts, which involved dog sniffs in public spaces. And Florida argues that Kylo is also readily distinguishable on at least two grounds. The thermal imager was capable of detecting lawful as well as unlawful heat-producing activity, Whereas here, Frankie only detects the presence of unlawful substances. And second, the Kyler decision addressed the use of sense-enhancing technologies not in general public use, and Frankie's just not the kind of sense-enhancing technology the court was contemplating there. It's not always wise to speculate on the basis of oral arguments, but it really sounded like the justices were not convinced by either side's attempt to cast this case as just a simple, minor extension of existing precedent. Several justices expressed unwillingness to accept Florida's claim that people have no expectation of privacy in contraband, period. Justice Kennedy stated this is just not something the court can accept across the board, and at least for him, that argument won't work. Justices Scalia and Sotomayor also clearly shared his skepticism. On the other hand, the justices also did not sound persuaded by Jardines' attempt to analogize this case to Kylo, not even Justice Scalia, who authored that opinion. Now, Justice Kennedy stated that argument is equally unacceptable, and Justice Alito called it clearly incorrect. So the court's resistance to both of these arguments suggests that the justices may give some consideration to a different theory that Jardines raised. Now, that argument focused not on the dog sniff as such, but on the actions that the police officer took in approaching the front door of a home with the detection dog. Entering into private property, onto the curtilage of a home with a dog, with the purpose of using that dog to sniff for drugs, is itself a search, Jardines argued. Now, why would that be? Well, because that action itself is common law trespass, and it violates the home dweller's reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, this theory relies on a case decided just last term, which concerned police use of a GPS device to track a car's movements. That tactic was held to be a search because the government physically trespassed upon a constitutionally protected area for the purpose of obtaining information. In that case, the government trespassed upon a car, which is in effect protected by the Fourth Amendment. Here, Jardines argued the government intruded upon the curtilage of the house, which is an area immediately and intimately linked to the house and is to some extent included under the protections extended to the home itself under the Fourth Amendment. Now, the difficult question raised by this theory is whether the policeman and Frankie really trespassed onto Jardines' curtilage, thereby infringing on his reasonable expectations of privacy, or whether they entered with a so-called implied invitation by custom, which would not violate privacy expectations. Now, it's generally understood in our society that, you know, mailmen, neighbors, Girl Scouts, and so on are invited to come onto our property and knock on our doors, and their entry is no trespass. On the contrary, their entry is deemed invited, and people have no expectation of privacy in anything such invited guests might see or smell when they act on this implied customer invitation. And in fact, policemen, just like Girl Scouts, are entitled to come to the front door and talk to the residents. This is so-called knock and talk. Now, Jardines argues that this customary implied invitation does not extend to police officers when they are there for the purpose of gathering information. And to this, Florida responds that officers rarely appear at the front door just to chit-chat. They're always harboring some kind of investigative motive. And the resolution of this case, according to Florida, can't possibly hang on the distinction between an officer who just comes to the front door to chat and an officer who comes to the door, perhaps with a dog, with a subjective information-gathering intent. Although Florida complained that this trespass-based argument is made for the first time here, it really sounded like the justices were more inclined to at least engage this theory. So I suspect the resolution of the case may well turn on how broadly or narrowly the court might conceptualize this implied invitation and the parallel expectations of privacy. In other words, it might turn on whether the customary implied invitation extends to anyone who comes to the front door, which would mean there's no expectation of privacy in anything they might learn along the way. Or the implied invitation might exclude agents of the state who are there with an information-gathering purpose, which means their entry into the curtilage does infringe on people's reasonable expectation of privacy and is, therefore, a search. Now, in the other case, the car of the respondent, Harris, was searched after another drug-detecting dog, this one's named Aldo, alerted at the door handle of his lawfully stopped vehicle. And the question here is whether this dog's alert created the probable cause required for a lawful search of the vehicle. The Florida Supreme Court says that in general, whether a dog's alert provides probable cause for a search hinges on the dog's reliability in detecting illegal substances. Now, Officer Wheatley, the dog's handler in this case, testified that Aldo was certified at one point, although his certification has expired and was obtained with a different handler. But Aldo also went through training together with this officer, and Aldo's performance was deemed satisfactory. Now, that wasn't sufficient for the Florida court. It held that the evidence that the dog had been trained and certified standing alone is not sufficient to establish a dog's reliability. Now, why not? One reason the court offered referred to local conditions. Florida, like many states, has no uniform state certification standards for single-purpose dogs like Aldo. Training and certification program may differ widely, so judges would know how meaningful a particular dog's training was. And without any sense for how well a dog actually detects drugs, it's very difficult for any judge to assess the reliability of a particular dog. Therefore, the Florida court held that to prove a dog's reliability, the state must present, one, training and certification records, two, an explanation of the particular training and certification, three, field performance records, four, evidence concerning the experience and training of the officer, and five, as well as any other objective evidence known to the officer about the dog's reliability. Now, that court placed particular emphasis on field performance. That's how well the dog performs in the field in actual situations as opposed to highly controlled training environments. And the idea is that a dog that has a high frequency of false alerts in the field for whatever reason really can't be reliable, even if it is certified. Both sides here ground their arguments in the often repeated doctrine that probable cause is a totality of the circumstances determination, should not be reduced to neat and rigid rules. Now, Florida argues that in essence what the lower court's holding does is create those very rigid and flexible rules. And the chief objection here is to the word must. Right? The Florida court imposed what looks like a mandatory list of information the government must provide. Now, these kinds of categorical requirements to produce information the police may not even have are at odds with the way courts have normally determined probable cause. The justices appear to have fewer bones to pick with Aldo here than with Frankie. A key reason for that is the notable concessions were made by both sides at oral arguments. Florida agreed that defendants and judges may question the dog's handler, but all the factors that the state court identified as important for the dog's reliability, so long as the government does not have an affirmative obligation to provide all these things every time. Harris, for his part, conceded that the must in the state court's ruling doesn't or shouldn't actually mean must. What it means instead is that all evidence the police actually have relevant to the reliability of the dog should be produced. Now, if the police do not have field performance records, they do not have to produce them, and other evidence can compensate for that. These concessions considerably narrow the gulf between the parties' positions, and at the end of the day, it appeared as if the justices would be reasonably satisfied with the state of affairs where the defendant and the judge are able to ask for more details about a dog's training and suppression hearings without mandating the production of those details.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.